Presentation is, sorry, you have the wrong sheet here. Parent-teen communication and look at Chinese American families in New York City. And this will be presented by Shou-Chi Sim. Shou-Chi Sim is currently the Director of Research and Evaluation of the Charles B. Wang Community Health Center in New York City. He oversees, directs, and manages various research projects targeting the health center patients and Asian American population. He also serves as an evaluator on a number of disease prevention, intervention, and health service projects. Working closely with the Center for the Study of an Asian American Health at NYU School of Medicine, Dr. Sim currently oversees the Health Disparities Research Training Program and serves as the co-director of the Hepatitis B Freed Seed at the Health Center. Dr. Sim has extensive evaluation consultancy experiences. He also worked as research evaluation officer at the Wallace Foundation, where he guided the foundation's research and evaluation strategies and opportunities. Prior to that, he was director of research at the Asian American Federation. He also oversaw the operation of Asian American Federation Census Information Center. Dr. Sims holds a PhD in public policy from the Lyndon Baines Johnson School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin and a master's in public administration from the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. During 2000 to 2002, he served as an adjunct professor at the Robert Milano Graduate School of Urban Policy and Management of the New School University, teaching program evaluation and research method course. As the first generation Chinese immigrant from Malaysia, Dr. Sim also reads and writes Chinese.
Hello. Let me begin by, you know, acknowledging Dr. Loretta Au, who is the co-author of the research. She's also a chief of the pediatrics department at the health center. She's in the audience today. I guess I begin by saying that, you know, I don't have any financial relationships to disclose. Also want to acknowledge that this is really the product of the whole team at the health centers. Was really a true collaboration between the research evaluation unit and our pediatrics department, with both staff and volunteers helping out. And it was also funded as part of the New York State Department of Health Community-Based Adolescent Pregnancy Prevention Program. In terms of the literature in this area for parenting communications, and more specifically for Asian Americans, what we found was that for the teens who have frequent discussions with parents about sex are more likely to adopt their parents' value and engage in safer sexual behavior. We also found that parent-child connectedness and authoritative parenting style has been found to be related to low sexual risk-taking behaviors. Most teens and parents are often very uncomfortable with topics directly related to sex. And also, based on the lit review, we were not able to find any types of studies or research relating to in this area relating to low SES Chinese American families. In terms of the setting in New York City, Asian Americans is actually one of the fastest growing population in New York City. It's right now comprised of about 13% of the New York City populations, and Chinese Americans is the largest ethnic subgroup for Asian Americans. It's about 5.4% of the New York City population, and the population continued to increase from 2000 to 2006. With the latest census data, it's increased by another 20%. And for this population, Chinese Americans actually have a very special cultural, linguistic, and economic needs. Again, based on the census data, 75% of Chinese Americans are foreign-born, as compared to 36% in all of New York City residents. 63% of them have limited English proficiency, compared to only 24% for all New York City residents. In terms of poverty, about 22% of them live below federal poverty line. However, for Manhattan Chinatown, the figure is close to one-third. Charles B. Wang Community Health Centers, it actually was founded or created in 1971 as a volunteer organization in New York City Chinatown. We started as a street health fair, and later in the late 1970s, we got designation as a federally qualified health center, an FQHC. Currently, the health centers provide a variety and very comprehensive primary care and enabling services to more than 35 patients in New York City, as well as resulted in about 175,000 encounters annually. In terms of the patient characteristics, about 98% of them are APIs, 88% are below poverty level, 68% of them are on Medicaid, and 22% of the patient populations are uninsured. The fact that the health centers has grown and has been so big, it also allow us to do a lot of fascinating and exciting first-hand research with our patient population. There are two overriding objectives for this study. First, we'd like to find out more about the content and the processes of parenting communications among underserved Chinese immigrants in New York City, Chinatown. Secondly, we also would like to better understand how health service providers can effectively facilitate communications within families about sex and sexual practices. Again, the target population for the study is Chinese American teens and their parents living in Chinatown. Chinatown is a neighborhood of immigrants. About 60% of its population are foreign-born, and 90% of these are Asians. There's also relatively poor education attainment, in that 70% of the Chinatown adults have less than high school education compared to 15% citywide, and nearly 90% of the adults are LEPs are Asians. There's also a pretty high concentration of poverty in Chinatown, with 31% of Asians or 39% of the Asian children that live in Chinatowns are in poverty as compared to 20% citywide. We use a focus group methodology with this study. In terms of the participant selection criteria, there were two major ones. One is we were trying to recruit teens ages from 15 to 19 who are fluent in English, residing in or near Chinatown, and with a parent who is a first-generation immigrant. Secondly, we were recruiting parents of teens ages from 15 and 19 fluent in either Cantonese or Mandarin and residing in or near Chinatown, and they must be first-generation immigrants. We also work very closely with our teen resource centers at the health centers to recruit both teens as well as parents of our pediatric patients. There were a total of four focus groups conducted. Two of them were with parents, and they were both conducted in Cantonese and Mandarin. For the teen focus group, for both male and female, we actually use English language, and also we were using a male facilitator to facilitate a male focus group and female facilitator to facilitate the female focus group. Some of the key questions that we asked, again, this was as a result of our getting the input from our doctors and teen health educators. There were four major areas. First is where and from whom do Chinese American teens learn about dating and sex? Second, relating to dating and sex, what are parents and teens most concerned about? Are they agreement? Are they disagreements? And also, relating to dating and sex, you know, what do parents and teens talk about? And finally, what are the major barriers to parent-teen communications, especially in the area of dating and sex? In terms of the profile of the participants, what we have is for a total of 17 teens that participated in the focus group, 10 are female, 7 are male. Majority of them were born in the country, where one moved from China at the age of 2. The average age is about 16. And in terms of their parents' education, majority of them have high school or above. And majority of their parents also just speaks a little or none or no English. For the parents' focus group, there were 16 females and 3 males. The years in the U.S. range from 10 to 40. The age range is from 38 to 66. Also, a majority of them had 6 to 9 years of formal education. In terms of English proficiency, most of them speaks just a little or no English. Most of them also come from the southeast part of China, from Guangdong and Fujian provinces, 3 from Hong Kong and 1 from Taiwan. In terms of the major sources of sex-related information, Teens and parents generally identify the same sources, friends and peers from the internet, from popular media like magazines and TV, from their authoritative sources such as sex education classes, books and doctors, and also from adults and older siblings with whom their teens feel comfortable with. However, interestingly, several parents did not know or were very unsure about where their teen sons or daughters learn about sex, dating, or relationships. Teens also did not find parents knowledgeable about sex-related information. Therefore, they often do not consider them as the source of information. In terms of some of the emerging themes coming out from this research, is that a few major concerns. First, they look at dating and sex as a major interference with their life-worthy pursuits, such as having a good education, healthy lifestyle, and having a successful job. For the teens, they thought, becoming pregnant, is going to be a real major interference in their life. One teen said, "My concerns are STDs, HIV, and pregnancy. I have a future, yeah, so I want to avoid pregnancy." For parents, they saw dating really as an interference for their schoolwork and for their future successes. One parent said, "After she graduates from college, she can do whatever she wants. She can date once she's in college." The other parent said, "Some girls mature earlier than others. Those who spend more time studying don't go dating as much. So I do my best to satisfy my daughter's desire. When she asks to take guitar lessons, for example, I got her a guitar and let her take lessons. I want to let her to have lots of interest so that she won't be spending time worrying about dating." other emerging themes. There's also implications on physical health and related ramifications, such as STDs and other health risks. Interestingly, only teens brought up STDs and also were able to demonstrate their knowledge of transmission and consequences of the infections. We also found emotional aspects of dating relationships and sex that were discussed very extensively among the female teens and to a smaller extent among the male teens. One teen said, "Sex is a big thing and I don't think you would want to regret your first time and everything." The second teen said, "Everyone talks about having a boyfriend and girlfriend and doing stuff with him or her. But you don't only talk about sex but relationship as well." So the emotional aspects of dating and sex, did not really come up explicitly in the parent discussions. We also found some gender double standards that, it's generally agreed that parents would worry more about their teen daughters than their sons, citing greater vulnerability and graver consequences for the girl. One teen said, "Most of today's parents are not really open to dating, especially if you're a girl, because they really don't want you to be pregnant." The other thing said, "Of course, that's the thing that men can go out late, but women cannot." A parent responded this way, "A girl is like a white sheet of paper. Many teenage boys in this country mature too early and approach young girls and act nice and caring." The other parent was even more explicit. "My daughter is 16 now and her body is all well developed. She's always wearing spaghetti straps. How do I tell her to stop? Society can be so perverted." The second area that we focused in our research was really looking at the content of their parent-teen communications. In terms of the basics of daily life, most parents tend to say, when their teens come home, "Have you taken a shower? Have you eaten or going to sleep early?" A teen responded this way, "My mom would just grab me at the dinner table and start talking to me. How was your day? How was work? What did you do?" They also talk about school, college applications, and careers. One teen responded, "I don't talk about relationships and girls. I talk about my schoolwork, my sports, and what I do in school with my parents." We also noticed the change of communications content through the years, especially from a preteen to the teen's years. A parent responded this way, "When they were little, they were pretty easy to handle until high school, when they started learning about things that we are so unfamiliar with, especially because they speak English." We found very limited communications, specifically on dating. Overwhelmingly, the parents insist on or prefer to postpone, this conversation until college or later. And that's the reason that we suspect a lot of the teens often decide to keep their dates from their parents. One teen responded this way. So even when I did date like freshman years all the way to now, it was just like everything was a secret. It was so hard because I'm so close to my mom. I just had to keep everything under the radar, and my sisters all had to lie for me to cover whatever I was doing. Sex-related topics doesn't come up as often, and only under a few situations, such as when an external chance presents itself. One teen said, "When we watch TV and those sex scenes comes up, she'll try to give me a talk, but I will feel so embarrassed that I just walk away." Or sometimes teen would say that, or another teen would say, "Yeah, whenever they do talk about it, it's like a teasing." As a rule, parents believe in abstinence until marriage. In terms of the major barriers to parenting communications, what we found was that parents and teens have different notions of good parenting and parent-child relationships. Teens are very eager to become grown-ups or to be on equal footing with their parents. One teen put it this way: "I just think we have our own opinions. When I talk to my parents, they always say, 'Why are you talking back to me? Why are you being so disrespectful?' I think I get to voice my opinions too, but they're always like, 'Don't talk to me. That's not what you're supposed to do.'" On the other hand, parents see respect and obedience as the highest virtue in children and consider their primary responsibility for guiding their children from all these negative influences. One parent said, "They know that you're right, but won't admit it because they're so self-absorbed. Unlike us when we were kids, when we readily accepted what our parents told us." Teens also fear that parents are not a credible source of information and support about dating and sex. One teen said, "My mom would go on and about how you can get AIDS from a toilet seat, and is not receptive to what I have to say. It scares me when I talk to her about other things like STDs and other health risks, and I guess it kind of takes away my trust in my parents a little bit." Another teen said that, "I don't think my parents know what love is. I think it's more like an obligation, like business." Teens also struggle with parents who have strong racial preferences and distrust, where they see dating and marriage only happen within one ethnic group. One teen said, "I always hear my parents say, 'Don't date anyone who is not Asian.' Oh, not even that. Only date Chinese." The parent would say, "My friend's daughter seems to be attracted to non-Asians for some reasons." So the parents are really at a loss as to how to handle this. The other barrier that we found from the research is that parents and teens are always wary of overreaction or being criticized by the others. One teen said, "My parents always compare me to my best friends. You try so hard to prove you are smart in other ways, but you always say because you have a higher grade than you, they are better, so you should be like them." And this is a quote from a parent: "Kids who grew up here learn and think very differently. Well, I think I'm showing my concern. My expressions of behavior is perceived as controlling, even though I was monitoring them." From our research, parents and teens both also feel the lack of tools or space for communications. Particularly for the U.S.-raised children, they struggle with Chinese, while immigrants' parents struggle with the English, adding frustrations to the communication process. There's also long work hours and out-of-state employment, which is very common with the populations. As one parent said, "As Chinese people, there are certain formalities we embrace, such as respecting people and giving them face. But when I take my kids out, they're way too casual, and old people are not happy and complain that I don't know how to raise my kids." One teen reacted this way: "They really just cannot relinquish all their old values and traditions and stereotypes." So in summary, there were three key things that were from our research that we found. One is we found that language and cultural gaps considered by parents to be the main barriers to parenting communications. We also found that Chinese immigrant parents likely face additional barriers to adopting to authoritative parenting style, and largely delegate this role to teachers, doctors, especially on issues relating to sex and dating. I think both parents and teens strongly wish for better relationships and communications with each other, although they're very different in terms of how they characterize good relationships and good communications. Just like similar to the previous study, we do have some limitations. There is a recruitment bias. The teen, both for the teens and the parents, were recruited from our teen resource centers and from our pediatrics clinic. We have a very small sample size, so that also limits the generalizability of our findings. Just very quickly, in terms of implications for practice, what we would like to see is that there will be more opportunities created for open parenting interactions and communications, such as co-learning workshops, problem-solving activities, field trips for parents and teens together. there's also a need to create more sex education content and training for the parents. The peer-to-peer intervention is an area, is a suggestion that some of the parents brought up in terms of organizing parent support sessions that led by parents with good parenting communications. We are also looking to compiling best practices for parents, especially dealing with cross-cultural conflicts and understanding of teens' perspective. Lessons for our clinics, medical staff, social service providers, and community-based organizations is that there's really a need to be neutral and refrain from placing the blame game on either the teens or the parents. We need to start this at a very early age in terms of fostering close relationships and communications during the elementary school age. And we also feel very strongly that parents need to be empowered in that they should recognize their strength and help them to take up more parenting responsibilities. In terms of future research, we hope to be able to do more research with greater participants' diversity, especially looking in the issue of acculturation levels, first generations versus second generations or later generations. We also like to diversify the participants from various Chinese-speaking countries. I think another interesting aspect is to do more cross-cultural comparison with other ethnic minority populations or immigrant populations. Definitely to improve generalizability of the research, there is a need to develop and implement more culturally and linguistically appropriate survey. So, thank you. Any questions? Yeah? Sure. The way we define authoritative parenting styles is that the teens will look at either the their teachers or the medical doctors, you know, as an authority or as having a credible source of having sex education or giving them advice about what to do. And they never consider their parents as, you know, having as being that knowledgeable or as being that expert about, you know, in this topic. Yeah. Yeah, no. This definitely came up in both our parent focus group and the teen focus group. I think for the parents, they were struggling in terms of not being able to understand or communicate with their kids in English. Well, for the teens, they were also struggling. Sometimes they were having a hard time understanding what their parents were talking about. So besides the cultural issue, there's also the linguistic gap. For the parents and the teens, and this is actually quite common, in a lot of the Chinese or Asian American immigrant families.
And I would say that that's pretty common. Another, if you're talking about maybe looking at results from other ethnic minority groups, that definitely happens with other groups. That there's a disconnect between parents and their kids because the kids don't know how to say certain things in their parents' language and vice versa, especially about sex.
Sure.
Especially in New York, I'm sure there's so many different groups and to combine and to collaborate as far as what has worked for other groups.
Yeah. I think what adds to this burden is that a lot of the parents and the families that we've been dealing with you know, our immigrant parents, you know, who have to work long hours, sometimes, you know, even leave New York City to work elsewhere. I don't know whether you guys know, there's a great transportation network from Manhattan, Chinatown, that would, you know, get you to, you know, any part on the eastern seaboard. And a lot of the parents, you know, literally spend weeks and months, you know, being away from the families. And that just adds to even more stressful, you know, just make the situation even harder for communications. Okay, thank you.
Our final